trade. You're saying, I don't care what you have to do, you got to get this dollar down. Well, the only way you're going to get the dollar down, where other idiots have been negative interest rates, is to get our interest rate down to like 1.5. Which now, are you more worried about trade, or are you worried about savers? And you're taking a chunk out of the height of savers in order to do what? And now, are there more savers in this country than there are overseas traders? The answer is probably yes. So, I mean, every country is different, right? I mean, there's a difference between a Swiss franc going up and down when you've got a couple of million people living up in the mountains, and here you got 330 million people of all different walks of life, savers, everything. Not that there aren't savers in Switzerland, but you know what I'm saying, Kevin? There's many more, shall we say, people to serve at the altar here, wouldn't you say, of different walks of life?
Yeah, I hear you on that, and you know, really what you're describing is that there are so many moving parts that we either ought to, look in awe at the Fed and say, wow, how do you manage all of that? Or we shake our heads at the Fed and say, how can you bother trying to? Why do you even try to manage all of that?
Well, is there any question that if you're on the Fed board, that the keeping the stock market up has been added to your job description?
Yeah, and I get why. First of all, there's constituencies to that they try to please, but as you mentioned before, there is a lot of 401k money in there. There is a fair amount of everyman type of investment in there. So, it's not 100%. Let's keep the market up for the 1%ers, but it's clearly. It's clearly on the agenda. If it weren't on the agenda, we wouldn't be so darn worried about it.
Well, yeah, there's no question. But we'll come back. Let's maybe talk a little bit more about this. Then we'll talk about other stuff, because all kinds of other stuff to talk about. S&P futures now up 250. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Miles. She's Jay Z on the board. S&P futures up 3.25. Now Nasdaq futures up 12.75. Dow futures up 51. One stock moving in the Dow is Microsoft. It's up 3.90. They had earnings last night and pleased everybody. So Microsoft, which has been on a tear for like a real long time. The stock was $35 for like years, and now it's $140. So if you would have taken your money out when it first got there in like 2000 and plunked it back in about 5 years ago, you'd have been very, very happy camper, shall we say. Around the rest of the world, we've got the Europe, DAX down 2. Sounds like a Friday in Europe in the summer. FTSE down 4, let's call that flat. CAC around down 4, so we are snoozing over in Europe today. Nikkei up 420, kind of the same 420 they were down yesterday, so that's interesting. Almost the exact same number, in fact, 2%. Shanghai up 23.8%, Hang Seng up 303, that's 1%. We've got oil, which is, we're back up, well, we're up 77 cents, but the same number we were yesterday, because it went down there in a day, like it seems to every day. Brent up $1.36296. RBOB gas down to 185, that's interesting. We've got gold up 10 bucks, 1438 is gold. The GDX is going up every single day. This is just wild on this gold all of a sudden now. I don't know what people think is happening in currencies around the world, but this thing was the sleepiest thing I know, because I've owned it for my clients for like 3 years. It went nowhere, and all of a sudden it's we're making all the money we should have made in 3 years, which is sort of bizarre. So I'm trying to manage that position, which is it's causing me some challenge, shall we say. Jay-Z, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Today's weather in Chicago today is partly cloudy with a high of 95 and a low of 80. Be aware that with the humidity today, there's an excessive heat warning, predicting temperatures to feel between 110 and 117 degrees. Phoenix is partly cloudy with a high of 109 and a low of 83. In baseball, the White Sox lost to the Royals 6-5. Cubs are off, and the Diamondbacks lost to the Brewers 5-1. Lastly, there are no accidents to report. Back to you.
Kevin, yeah, just to kind of to finish up a little bit, and I guess it coming full circle around to why does this chief guy manage money for people? Kind of likes it when the market goes up because a lot of his people are long, yet is so concerned about the stock market being propped up, because if it's propped up, it's a good thing. I would just say, Kevin, I come from this very old school. When I got to the trading floor and at the University of Chicago, my upbringing, shall we say, is that the market is bigger than anybody, even the government. The guys on the trading floor would always say, anybody who thought they could move the market, let them try for a few days, and guess what? The market is bigger than anybody. Plus, I'm absolutely convinced that if a market runs up 20% and runs down 20%, it does more harm than good. Now, granted, there's going to be somebody who buys it before it runs up and sells it at the top that's fat and happy, and that's fine. I hope that would be me or my clients. But fact is, the way the tax laws work and the way people act as people, there are going to be people that at the top of the market are going to call, and we don't do so much of this, but and I guess we would because it's legal. I mean, if somebody wanted to buy 1,000 shares of IBM, which is trading 150, the way the margin works, you have to send us $75,000. Okay, and then on the way down, we don't have a margin call until the initial margin is 50% and the maintenance margin is 30%. Everybody who's in the industry knows that. So you actually get some slippage on the downside, unlike before the 1929 crash where you had to make margin payments every day. It was a one-to-one. In the commodity side of the world, it's still one-to-one. You put up 1,000 hours for a futures contract, you lose $1,000, they're going to come after you for 1,000 hours that day. There's no slippage. Okay, but on the way down, the people who make the $20 have to pay full taxes on it. People who lose the $20 don't have anything else to write it off against, get to write off $3,000 for the rest of their lifetime, and they better live to be about 500 if it's a big loss, which is a totally screw-up in the tax law that both sides of the aisle can't seem to fix. I don't understand quite why that number is the same as it was when the Dow was under 1,000, and now it's 26,000, you know, so which is totally insane. So having said that I don't like markets propped up only to go back down, I still believe, Kevin, in my heart of hearts and maybe my University of Chicago education, is that the market in the long run is even bigger than the government. And I'm not so sure I'm right about that anymore. And a lot of young people, what are you talking about? It looks to me like the Fed can keep it up. And I saw some guy on TV 2 weeks ago. Obviously he was probably born here. I'm sounding like Trump here now. But he looks like somebody from Iran or someplace. Brilliant guy, absolutely brilliant guy, runs this huge company, so I'm not disparaging any of that stuff. I'm saying I'm proud of the guy, wherever the hell he came from. He kind of come from my neighborhood, I don't know. But he here's a guy that has got nothing but money, nothing but brains, probably the best education, probably way better than mine, and he says, I don't even worry about the business cycle anymore, the Fed can take care of it. And I heard that, Kevin, I'm like, is that how all these young people believe, that everything is fixable by our government? I mean, you and I are way closer to that than...
Yes, it's the government's job to fix this, to make sure it, you know, the common phrase is make sure it never, ever happens again.
But the market even going down 5%, that's now become the government's job, too?
I guess so.
See, I don't believe they're smart enough to pull it off. And that's the issue. I mean, I don't know what it is, but I'm just wary of it. I don't like people coming out and giving stupid speeches when the market has any kind of a small correction, because small corrections are part of the market. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm. You get no argument from me on that.
Well, now the question is,
at radio, but I can't argue with it.
But are they? Is it true though that I'm wrong now that they are controlling it and that they actually can control the business cycle and the government and everything else, or the market?
Are you wrong that they?
I don't think
they can.
I don't think they can, and yet lately it seems like they're doing pretty good at it. I mean, you know, looking in the mirror going...
You can do anything for a little while. I mean, you know, we saw that. We saw that with the housing market. It was, in fact, that was for quite a while because it was the policy of both the Clinton administration and the Bush administration to encourage more home ownership and to drive it down the economic spectrum. And you saw how that blew up. You know, it sort of spun out of control for lots of reasons, including... people who should have gone to jail for some of what they did, but you know, when part of the problem is that when the government gets involved, then all that really does is it forces people to figure out how to make the rules work for them. And one of the things that you saw with the rules, the way that that Fannie Mae was just approving loans, you know, without much documentation, as an example. That you had everybody who ever made a loan was hanging out a shingle and saying, I'm a mortgage company now because I can lay them off. I can lay them off on Fannie. I can lay them off in the non-government or non-quasi-government market to places like Nationwide. And, you know, I can lay them off. I can make the loans. I take my commission, for lack of a better word. I take my percentage of the cost. And I don't even have to service them. So, you know, was that healthy? Well, we were lending like crazy. And, you know, and And we weren't requiring much documentation. So forget fraudulently obtained loans. Just the loans that had no rigor behind them and that set people up and said, well, I'll just give you, you know, I'll give you an interest-only loan for 5 years, and then the balloon's going to come, you know,
okay, well,
you're going to have to refinance. Well, you know what? When we hit simultaneously bad economic times at the same time, all that was coming home to roost. And we had problems. We had a lot of people who could not refi because they were out of work because our unemployment rate was so high. You know, this is, you know, there's always this other event that can come along and undermine anything that looks like it's working.
All right, well, let me, I love it when I can not trip you up, but take you a little further. I love it when I can do that. All right, so you have people in your mind and in a lot of people's minds that are getting loans that they shouldn't have gotten on homes when virtually the entire time this country has been a country, few exceptions, where the collateral of a home in a nice neighborhood has been seriously good capital. And the story always was that if people put down 20% or 10% or something, that was more than enough to insulate banks and so forth. Okay, would you agree with me on that before I...
Right, when you took the real estate back, even if it wasn't worth what you loaned for it, it was worth, you know, 80% minus whatever had already been paid off.
All right, so you can, right now, today, at PTI... So,
but that works if you don't flood the market with too many properties.
Okay, right now, today, at PTI, which, like I said, this is not nowhere near our business, but I'll name everybody else. Fidelity, Schwab, you name it. They make almost all their money, Kevin, on interest. Okay, now we're one of the few, because we do options here. I think we're one of the few firms in the world that actually has debit money. We lend money back to the clearing firm, which is very rare. That's why people actually love us as a customer, because they can turn around and pay our people like one and charge somebody else six. You know, so it's good business if you can get it. But IB, however, is paying 1.9, so we have two clearing arrangements. But what I'm saying is, right now today, you could take Mickey DeMope, doesn't know anything about stocks, saves up some money, listens to some bozo on TV, and I'll use that term loosely, and walk in and saved up all his dough, and he could buy 1,000 shares of Tesla for $255, and he'll give us a check for whatever that would be, $128 or $127,500. And we, the industry, could care if this guy has 48 cents in his pocket. He's going to get a 50% loan on a stack he knows nothing about, that never makes very little dough. All of a sudden, tomorrow, if Tesla's trading 110, he, the firm, everybody is bleep out of luck. So it's the same thing, because everybody thinks the Fed, by definition, has said that stocks over 5 hours are good collateral and 50% is enough. Now, people thought 10 or 20% was enough in the stock in the other, and I'm going to say 50%, 99% of the time is plenty for stocks. It's actually probably pretty conservative, but it's not there all. It's the same thing. You think stocks are good collateral, and 50% is plenty. Just like the housing stock is good collateral, 15% is plenty, or 10 or 20, whatever the hell it is. And then when prices are going up so darn fast, somebody even says, "Why do we even need 20? 5 looks pretty good to me." Right? So what's the difference?
There is no difference. Other than, you know, is, and that's what I mean, is there something that can come along now and an event that will make that not true? Because as soon as it's not true, we got a big problem.
Well, hold that thought, bud.
And that's what happened with the mortgage market is,
yep,
we simultaneously we had incredibly high fuel prices that really,
Kevin, hold that thought. There's a whole conversation after
the inevitable fire anyway.
Whole conversation after break, bud. SP Futures now up 5. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. the daily news, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomas. She's Jay-Z on the board. Bright-eyed and bushy-tail. We saw Jay-Z last night. You had an interesting crowd last night. You had our man McP and his new gang. We had Robert. We had a nice group last night. It was fun.
Yeah, it was.
Was the outside brutal?
It was pretty hot out there today. I wonder what they're going to do today with the predictions.
At least it's in the shade. They got that going for them. But boy,
not all of it. On Fridays, they have that whole open patio that's not shaded at all.
Oh, yeah, only the real believers are going to be in the sun today, I'm thinking. SP futures up 575. The NASDAQ futures up 20. I guess we're going with this, Kevin. We probably beat this one up. But when you and again, boy, you can send this. Send the show today to the Trump people and say, Chief's a Trump guy. And one of the things I think instinctually he picks up on is, even though I don't want the Fed following these other people down the rat hole, you have to be very aware of international currency flows when there is a difference. Because the lion's share of the money that went into the crazy loan agreements back in 2007, 2008 came from the fact that these mortgages were 6%. And people were able to borrow money in Japan for one. It wasn't just, I mean, you and I, Kevin, if we were fat and happy Daddy Warbucks kind of guys, you and I are not going to get, sexually turned on by a 6% rate. It's like, so what? I mean, it's okay, but it's not for mortgages. Unless we could find some other place where we could borrow a bunch from one. Now all of a sudden, that 5% spread's a big deal, right? So Trump is instinctively saying we can't be that far away from the rest of the world, but I don't know if that means you follow somebody in bad policy either. That's a tricky deal. It's not like it's easy, I don't think.
No, I don't think it's easy at all, and that's why we'll go back to the beginning of our conversation and say, does it seem to make more sense to you to say, let's just let you know, not unfettered. I'm not an unfettered free marketer here. But can we let the market revolve around a steady plan and a steady rate of growth of the money supply, and not try to manage everything at a level that actually is at best illusory?
My answer to that would be yes, but how are you going to get somebody to do it?
You're not. So what are we left to do? Sort of sit back and watch.
I'm going to say if you took the last
and do your best to thrive in that environment.
If you go back to going off the gold standard in 1968 or something, Kevin, when they did to help pay for the Vietnam War, and you look at starts and stops in the money supply, growing way faster than 3, contracting way more than the 3% growth. If you were to put that on a chart or a graph, take about a 3 or 4 month delay, which is what monetary policy takes, and put the stock market on top of it, virtually every huge run-up and every crash is going to follow, not every single one, but pretty much everyone, I'm going to say with a couple exceptions, is going to follow the extremes in Fed policy. Everyone. Which gives me... Okay. That if I was grading the Fed since 1968, 50 years, FFFFF! Just saying.
Well, then they probably don't like you very much.
No. Then. Or they've never had a chance to really try something long term, because long term would be 10 years, and you change presidents every 4 years, and you get involved in the campaign. I mean, people have to be aware that Bush 1 felt that Greenspan cost him his second term, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that if Carter would have waited a year before he signed Volcker on the market and the money supply, and just said, "Okay, let's just put this off for you," and all we have to do, we're going to wait till after the election, I think he would have beat Reagan. So to say,
he might have. He still had, you know, that whole hostage situation to deal with, and looking pretty feckless on that, whether it's his fault or not.
Right, I understand.
Doesn't look good. And he also, you know, what Carter had a problem, the same problem actually that most of the Democrats have today in terms of candidacy, there's no optimism. And, you know, if you really want people to gravitate towards a candidate, find the candidate who is most optimistic. The one who says that, you know, we can, I don't care if it's Make America Great Again or anything like that, and Trump speaks to a specific constituency most of the time, but there is at least an optimism in there, you know, woven in there, even while he's telling you what's wrong. That, you know, how many candidates have you seen in the last 20 years that really exude, you know, kind of the optimism of Ronald Reagan? Again, founded or not, doesn't matter. It's just that, you know, he had that. You know, Romney, extremely competent man, a really good candidate for the presidency. But did he give you that feeling like, hey, I can make it, you know, I can lead us towards prosperity? I can lead us towards a strong, you know, good spot in the world? You know, did you ever get that from him? I didn't.
No.
You know, you can. There's lots of people. Do you get that? You know, do you get that from Bernie all the time? No, you get, you know, from Sanders. You get what's wrong, not what's gonna be right.
But you're not those
they,
people.
They don't paint that picture of what the country can be.
Those people are so rare. You know, when John Kennedy walked into Berlin and said, what do you say, in Germany said, I am a Berliner.
And I'm a Berliner, yeah.
Yeah. And or Reagan, tear down this wall. I mean, people, they have a sense for that, but I'm going to say that it would have, we'll put it this way, it would have been very close if Carter would have pushed the recession off here, which he could have done. I'm not a Carter fan. I'm just saying that
and I'm not arguing with you. I think he still had other issues that were going on there, but you know, he kind of killed himself when he talked about our great national malaise. I think that was it. Was that his terminology?
Well, and we were in somewhat of a.
You know, that's not what people want out of leaders in general.
You get caught with
I preach all the time with my students is, you know, leadership is something you do on purpose. It's very intentional and it's optimistic that there is never anything we can't overcome.
And
if you get that out of a candidate, that's who's going to win.
But it's also, Kevin, there are times when the leadership, let's all go. How can I put this? If you're a leader in battle, and you know you got to go forward, and your troops are grousing, maybe you got your ass kicked the week before, and they say, "Well, we got to go tomorrow." Well, this tank doesn't work, this truck doesn't work. If every tank doesn't work and every truck doesn't work, you can't attack. But there's some level at which, okay, we know everything's not perfect, but we're going anyway because guess what? We can still pull. I'm saying there's a timing to leadership as well, and if it's just not your time. It's sort of like money supply. There's a time when you can inject some money in a system, when a system's already starting to percolate, and you hit it just right, and you help things. Otherwise, you open up the briefcase at State and Madison, it doesn't go anywhere. I mean, there's a timing to this, and some people have a sense for it, and some don't. They're never in the time when anything can happen, right?
Well, yeah, and there is a time for certain people to be there.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that, you know, the right person, right time. But honestly, the idea is that you see obstacles, you don't see showstoppers.
I would agree. Kevin, we talk about it next Wednesday, buddy.
You know, that's what we're not getting. We got 20-plus candidates, and I can't think of one of them that has that attitude.
Well, I would agree, but maybe somebody. Anyway, have a good weekend. Stay cool until Sunday, at least, where it's going to cool off. Have a good one, buddy.
Hey, man, I'm always the coolest guy.
Oh, God, yes, you are. SP Futures on 475. Be right back. Mr. Wayne Matson.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Jay-Z. Jessica Zalewski on the board. SP Futures up 575. Dow Futures up 83. But this doesn't really give the story. The story was yesterday afternoon, we raced up at there to close. A lot of this was on a Fed speech that he essentially said was misdirected or misinterpreted later. It's not what he meant to say, so it's kind of a new low on this. So that actually all came down, but now we're moving back up again. So Wayne, how are you? I'm having a hard time following this. Who's on? Who's trying to influence the market? Who's trying to do stuff? What is with this Fed New York guy? I mean, this Williams. No, I didn't mean to say that. After he moved the Nasdaq futures 94 points, then he didn't mean to say what he said. Wayne, are you there?
Oh, hi. I'm here. I remember having conversations with Ron Paul, the former congressman and the father of Rand Paul, and he said he hated the Fed, he wanted it audited, but you know, I tried to ask him, what do you think the Fed does? And it was an honest question. I wasn't sure I knew either, and he couldn't answer me. I guess when it comes to the machinations of the Fed, I leave that to the people that are in the proper pay grade.
Now, you see, Wayne, if you came out here once in a while, like you always threatened to do, I could plant your fanny down where some people from the Fed will come down and love to talk to you. And when you find out what they do, it's 95% of the Fed basically keeps the economies of the world running and keeps people out of trouble in terms of checks and currencies and money flows and making sure that settlement times are at the same time so one doesn't settle a minute before the other and have a problem in the minute in the middle. 95% of what they do, you'd be amazed and say, how could we possibly go without it? I think the answer is we couldn't. Then there's the 5% on top that's a policy.
Well, I'm being somewhat facetious. I actually know a friend of mine used to cover the Fed as, you know, he's a journalist covering them in Washington, and he did explain to me stuff about the money supply in this one room that sounds very intriguing. It was they called the money room at the Federal Reserve in Washington, and apparently that's where a lot of discussions go on about the money supply. It got into astronomical numbers.
Oh yeah,
And a lot of way beyond my checking account.
A lot of what happens vis-a-vis all the exchanges and the clearing corps and everything are all happening. That's all part of the Chicago Fed now. The Chicago Fed's becoming very, very powerful in that regard because clearly a lot of money or investments and everything like that. And And there's a one of the ladies there. I haven't seen her in a while, but she used to show up once in a while at our kind of caucus table, and it was just fascinating, Wayne. Because I'm saying she wouldn't know your name was on it, but if a Wayne Madsen check came through Chicago, she knew about it. Because everything flows through when all checks are cleared by a central bank,
right?
I mean,
right.
And every they know which bank needs money overnight, which one doesn't, which one. If all of a sudden you know you get a loan for $30 million to build something, and the bank that you get the loan from isn't the same place that maybe you check an account, there's a $30 million hole to fill to the other place, and she's probably moving money in the overnight market from one to the other.
Right. Well, I can see why you know the debate over cryptocurrency is causing some angst, at least at the Treasury Department. I'm not sure about the Fed, but I can't imagine the Fed's too happy about this idea of cryptocurrency. I actually know one of the guys that developed it years ago, a cryptographer named David Chom, explain to me how this cryptocurrency, I can go to the 7-Eleven and, buy a cup of coffee and a donut, and it, of course, when you talk to a mathematician, you usually get a mathematician's response, and I'm not sure I still understood the basis. I know it's, some sort of cryptographic algorithm used and all kinds of other stuff.
Okay, but don't make yourself go down that road. Just think about the word alternative currency, and there's really several different alternative currencies. And when we see things happening, it's harder and harder to use cash. Okay, now for instance, if I get my American Express bill, whenever I get up to 50,000 points, I get a $500 card to go to Home Depot and buy my next remodeling stuff out of there. That in essence is a cryptocurrency. So say, for instance, we've only got Discover, American Express, Visa, and MasterCard, right? Charging increasing fees to people and charging increasing interest. Then you've got a firm like PayPal, which, of course, uses MasterCard if you want to get a card from them. I don't have one, but every once in a while I get the letter from them. What if, now that banks don't give you don't really want to give you a loan, so people are using PayPal for loans or there's other places online. What if PayPal, say, buys two of those places? And so Wayne, if he wants to get a loan for a business, he goes in and he borrows the money from PayPal. But now, the stuff that people buy from you, now if they use PayPal, you could easily have a pool of PayPal credits where somebody, whenever you pour money into PayPal, you just get PayPal credits. And then when you go to buy something from somebody else, instead of using your Visa card, you just shift over some PayPal credits. So nobody has to pay Visa the 2% or 2.5% whatever the hell they charge.
Right.
So you could end up having a very easily an alternative currency. I'm not doing this is not an ad for PayPal. At some place like that to where you don't have to enter the system. You don't have to pay Visa. You don't have to pay anybody else. If you've got credits in PayPal and somebody else does their stuff through PayPal, maybe as a loan, you just say, do you want dollars, or should I shift you $1,000 worth of PayPal credits? The other person may say, give me the PayPal credits. I owe PayPal.
Right. I certainly see there's a future for that because, at least in the Democratic Party debates, we've seen a lot of talk about universal basic income. And, is that going to be just sending people, a U.S. government check in the mail? I get the impression it's going to be something like as what you're talking about, based on a person's needs, is going to be some sort of credit extended to them electronically. And that, of course, that's done with the SNAP program now. People get a what looks like a credit card. It is a credit card, a debit card, and they go and buy their groceries.
I know it's all theater, Wayne, but one of the young guys, I kept looking to see who it was. I'm guessing he might have been a Democrat, but I don't know. Who was the buffoon that took out the $20 bill during the?
Oh, which buffoon in the Democratic Party?
I don't know. I don't know if he was Democrat. I just know he was young. Now, he could have been Republican.
I do know there is one person who's really advocating the universal basic income. That's Andrew Yang.
No. This was had to do with the guy from Facebook they're beating up on about the their alternative currency.
Well, you mean Mark Zuckerberg?
No. Whoever was on the stand for Facebook, then and everybody's grilling him. The one lady from California, I don't want any currency. I only want the U.S. dollar. She was an idiot.
Yeah.
But then there's this guy that he pulls out a $20 bill and he starts talking about, you see this $20 bill? It's like good everywhere. You can use this. Why do I need your basically your credit?
That first, could be any number of people. If you want to realize what's happened to the overall IQ of the country, you know, people should watch the C-SPAN a channel that carries what they call open session in the House. This is where there's one congressman speaking to an empty chamber, you'll hear a lot of stuff like that. You know, this dollar is, you know, whatever they're doing. Yeah, you get all kinds of histrionics like that.
But I guess my if it was me, Chris, I'm probably a little shorter temper than some. I don't know what's the Irish or Italian side, but and even though, as you know, I'm very slow to anger, actually. But in that spot, I would have to say, with all due respect, don't you get it, you idiot, that the reason why there needs to be an alternative currency is because the $20 bill you're holding is becoming less and less valuable everywhere. Can't use it on planes. You can't use it at the bar I go to. You can't use it at a mortgage closing. That's why we're doing this, you idiot. Don't you get it? If the $20 bill you're holding could do all the things you said it did, you wouldn't need me.
Right. And if you talk to people with the Secret Service, and I have, about the problem with counterfeiting, it's a major problem, especially with the 20s. Used to be the 100s, but they did some fancy footwork there. But it's only a matter of time before someone's able to clone these bills. And you've got more of a demand for the electronic digital currency than currency.
Let me help you, Wayne. Our normal producer, Mr. Matt Weber, who you know very well, works for a internet security firm, credit cards and everything. And one day I said, Matty, all this basically crap about counterfeiting and drug money and all kinds of stuff. I said, right now, where is all the shall we say, devious people regards to money? He said, Chief, 90% of it is being stolen online. And the idea that cash is the problem is so ignorant it's scary.
Yeah.
I mean,
it is scary because, you know, especially in certain parts of the world, the counterfeit 100s are all over the place.
Well, that I understand, but or I've heard. But I mean, we have if you know real estate people, which I'm sure you do, name me one, since the rule is that every single closing now, it all has to be wire transferred, name me one that doesn't know of a wire transfer that got pilfered. And the same person, when you could bring a couple hundred hours in case there was a problem in the closing or bring a check, that never once had a problem with it.
Right. Well, it's a big problem. And the Treasury Department, of course, has always had an issue with that. I heard a story years ago about a stolen plate that it was being sent for disposal. This is a plate they used to actually print the currency. And it had a hairline fracture in it that really didn't affect the print of the printed currency, but it somehow disappeared on the way to the wherever they sent it to be destroyed. And there was this huge amount of angst at the Treasury Department over that issue. I know one of the TV networks was looking into it and heard that maybe the North Koreans have gotten a hold of this damaged plate. But I never heard anything more about that story. But it does, counterfeit currency is a very big issue.
I'm sure it is.
Not just with our country, with others as well.
But it's now what percentage of transactions. But now, Wayne, you're a guy that has a certain amount of common sense. Now, if you and I are sitting in the Treasury and you go, this thing has a hairline crack in it.
Yeah.
Let's send it to Omaha to get destroyed. I would think that you and I, being somewhat blue-collar people, would say, hey, Jay-Z, here's $20. Go down to the hardware store and buy me a small sledgehammer. And before I send it to Omaha, I'm going to give that thing one hell of a whack. Why are other people that ignorant and not do that? Why would you ship that thing whole?
You could probably write a very voluminous book on dumb decisions by people in the government.
But I mean, why not make the thing useless? There's probably a place where you go destroy it, and who knows what it's made out of. You know, maybe it's steel you want to recycle or something. But why not make the thing useless before it walks out the door?
Yeah, good question. You're assuming these people have what you that magic phrase you use, common sense.
I
see a lot of cases in the government where that's totally lacking. Well, not just government. I've been in business, too. Big corporations, it's actually sometimes worse.
How similar do you find, if you want to talk about government, all you got to do here in Chicago is call People's Gas or Commonwealth Edison. It feels like you're calling a city, for God's sake. Same thing.
Yeah.
How do we bring that back? Is there a chance? How do we fix that, Wayne?
I'm not certain. I mean, I'm looking at, I have worked for the government, and as bad as it can be sometimes, and as rough around the edges as it can be, it actually gets things done. I mean, more by, I think, accident than in some cases design, but now what I see looking at the present, at least the federal government, and that tends to ripple down to the states and municipalities, is just really total dysfunction. When you look at what has the Congress passed? They even had trouble passing a compensation fund for the 9/11 victims because two senators decided, it wasn't paid for. When in fact others there were saying, look, some of these people paid with their lives, and you're talking about paying for this compensation fund. As something as basic as that, we see total, inaction. And, a lot of this is because, Trump sometimes ties everything to his wall, and nothing gets done.
Well, I don't see, nobody wants to see things get fixed in this country and go back, and the jobs that are involved with it.
What happened to the infrastructure program? This is where the Republicans and Trump were going to be on and the Democrats were all going to be on the same page.
You must have listened to Wednesday's show, because Russell Rhodes was saying, hey, Chief, when was the last time you heard about the infrastructure? I haven't heard about it in months. I come from a manufacturing background. I don't know if you knew that or not, from Pullman, but there's infrastructure like the Golden Gate Bridge. There's infrastructure like the Hoover Dam. Now, of course, they've already been built. But to not maintain a bridge until you can't drive over it and just replace that bridge that you should have been able to maintain before, and it costs you three times as much to build it now as it did 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
Right.
To me, you're not gaining anything. You're just, I don't know what you're doing to yourself. There's probably a word that I can't use on TV. Or on radio, but you're not gaining anything. I mean, if you figure out a way that the next bridge is going to be three lanes instead of two, because there's a traffic tie up there, and you can give people 5 minutes or 8 minutes a person back in their day, that type of thing is very important, I think. Or if you could put a rail line on the new bridge, you didn't have one on the old bridge, something along those lines. But the idea that you just wait for crap to fall apart and then run in and pay some guy a huge amount of money to put back what you had before, I don't know you obviously have to do it at some point, but you don't get anywhere with it.
I mean, and that is an issue with the Golden Gate Bridge. All that sea salt over the years is absolutely deteriorating the bridge, and they're going to try to make some sort of a fix, but it's going to be temporary in nature.
Well, I mean, but that's my example the other way. Whenever you go across the Golden Gate, I haven't been there in a while, somewhere on the bridge you see that the tarp, right?
Right.
Well, at least in the Golden Gate Bridge, and I've read stuff actually just the opposite way, is it when they first built the thing, and they have done a lot of work with it to make more earthquake prone or whatever. Not sensitive.
Earthquake proof, which I'm not sure anything is really earthquake proof, depending on the Richter scale magnitude. It could be.
Well, but those guys, they start at one end, they sandblast, go right down. If you do this to steel, I mean, I'm not a metallurgic guy, I'm going to say that the Golden Gate Bridge is probably the best maintained thing in this country. And they when they get to the other end, they go back to the beginning and start all over again. And they know that if you do it every 2 years, you can keep the salt damage away from that. They sandblast it, they paint it. But if we did that to every bridge in Chicago, we'd never have to replace one.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's and here's something. You know, when I've been in Europe, I haven't been in Europe for a while, I'm always seeing, they have a fairly old infrastructure. They have new stuff too, but there's always some sort of a crew, refurbishing, painting, the old infrastructure. And, because they rely on the trains. They rely on these, bridges and whatnot to, maintain their way of life. And, we saw in Minneapolis a few years back what happened with one of the bridges collapsed. And it was an interstate highway. And, these are important issues, but, you see a lot of foot dragging on that basic. Yeah, as far as the train system, I'm surprised Amtrak can still maintain itself because I've talked to the engineers on Amtrak, and they'll say, look, they call it our equipment. And they said, look, some of this stuff is like 35, 40 years old. And, the people who originally manufactured this equipment are long since gone. The companies are gone, and yet we have to maintain it.
Well, I'll tell you who the company was. It was Pullman. Because I worked on them, the double deckers.
Yeah.
But you know what the weird part is, though? If you want, which you can do, Wayne, with railroad cars, depending on, those are all stainless steel cars. Okay, so stainless steel is going to last you like a real long time. So if you, every 12 years or so, and maybe 15, maybe more sooner for Amtrak cars, because they put way more. Amtrak car puts 10 times the mileage on it than a commuter car does. It has mileage. So if every 12 years you replace the truck, replace some of the wiring, replace the air conditioner, replace the seats, and maybe maybe some of the windows and things, you basically got a new car again. I mean, you're talking about a stainless steel shell, which should last you 100 years, damn near. It's not going to corrode. So, I mean, if done properly, you can maintain these things for quite a while. You look at the parts that have, that are moving. It's the trucks and those kinds of things. Now you have to make sure, some of the plumbing, your waste management system, those things you're going to have to rehab every once in a while, all that kind of stuff. But these things, there's everything you buy for a railroad car, or certainly for a plane, you couldn't go to Home Depot and put one of those switches in a railroad car. Thing, they're like, if there's a button that you push to turn the headlights on, and sometimes it'll be this big awkward looking button, and you go, what the hell is that? Well, I guarantee you that someplace somewhere, somebody had a button pusher in some place that tested that for like a million pushes. Rough, different, and before that thing, there's like a society, it's approved for railroad, tolerance. That stuff is heavy duty crap.
Right.
It's not like a switch in your bedroom.
The problem for Amtrak is there's a lot of members of Congress, in both parties really, that aren't from the Northeast Corridor that refuse to fund it. And they say, wait a minute, why do we have to fund something that, and of course the fact that Joe Biden used it when he was a senator to travel between Wilmington and Washington doesn't make it much better for Amtrak. But, they say, wait a minute, You know, we fly in from California or Montana, and why do we have to fund this local commuter system for the Northeast? You know, they don't like the Northeast. And,
no.
And the biggest enemy of Amtrak was John McCain. I mean, when they came in for funding, they you know, the Amtrak people were like, "Oh my God, you know, are we going to get McCain on a bad day or you know, a mediocre day?" There was never a good day when it was Amtrak.
Well, here's here's,
you know, that it boiled down to stuff like that.
Well, Wayne, you know you're in my wheelhouse with this, but here's the issue with Wayne. Can you hang a little more after the break? I hope you can. The skinny with rail traffic in this country is that in Europe, very early on, they had the freight rails, and next it was the passenger rail. They were always segregated rails. So you're not going to see a 100-car freight train lumbering down some track, and an hour later some passenger train come flying over at 90 miles an hour. You're not going to see that in Europe. Plus, even though we had nothing but room here in this country, there is no such thing as a crossing in Europe. The train either goes above the road or below the road.
Right.
So here, you're not going to run, you know, say, for instance, you wanted your freight going through the middle of town because that's where you drop your freight off. You don't want to run an Amtrak train through Hammond, Indiana at 100 miles an hour at 2 in the morning. You know, so there is definitely a difference in how the thing was designed in the first place.
All right.
And right now, You couldn't get a passenger train on the Union Pacific because they run a freight train. If you drive out skiing or wherever going west on I-80 right next to the train tracks, you're going to see a train going by there, I'm going to say, every 25 minutes, going exactly 55 miles an hour, which is as fast as a freight train can go on Class 5 rail or whatever the hell it is, because you don't want to be gaining on the guy ahead of you or the guy behind you. That you couldn't put a passenger train on there and run it 70 miles an hour to Denver, you run into 15 trains along the way. They want no part of it because...
Right.
Anyway, we'll talk about this after break. SP Futures now up 750. Getting back on some of the stuff we were up last night. NASDAQ Futures up 25. I'm Tom Allen. He's Wayne Manson. She's Jay-Z. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Molly, Mr. Wayne Manson, Jay-Z on the board. SP Futures down up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 22. Again, we were down yesterday heavy. The Fed guy came out, gave his speech that he now says was just research. But it definitely tricked everybody into flying around. And NASDAQ was down 40 and finished up like 50. I'm going to say 95-point turnaround. And then in the close, we were way up. And then, of course, he came out after the close and said, by the way, I was just talking about research and not real life. So we came in this morning, we were barely up, and now we're up 6. So it's very strange. These numbers are a little odd here, shall we say. Dow Futures up 91. Over in Europe, we're darn near, well, we're up some now. Earlier, we were pretty much flat. DAX up 25.2%, FTSE up 20.2%, CAC ran up 15.2%. Earlier they were flat. Asia though, we got big rallies. Nikkei was down like 401 yesterday, today they're up 420. So, that's 2%. Shanghai up 29, it's 8.8%. Hang Seng up 303, that's a whole 1%. Oil up 50 cents, but it's still only 55.83. So, every morning we've said oil is up, and yet it's down probably $3 since the beginning of the week. So, as soon as the show's over, it craters every day. Brent up 67 cents, 62.60. RBOB gas down to 184.9 right now. It was $2 a couple weeks ago. Gold continues the rally up 960, $1,437, highest we've seen in a long time. Silver up another 19 cents, 16.39. Jay-Z, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. Today's weather in Chicago is partly cloudy with a high of 95, low of 80. Be aware that with humidity today, there's an excessive heat warning predicting temperatures to feel between 110 and 117 degrees. Phoenix is partly cloudy with a high of 109, low of 83. In baseball, the White Sox lost to the Royals 6-5, Cubs are off, and Diamondbacks lost to the Brewers 5-1. Lastly, there are no accidents to report. Back to you.
The Wayne, I'm going to pontificate for another second or two, then I want to ask you some questions about what's going on with Boeing. But I'd like to do two things in my new way of government. Is, first of all, everything you do, we shouldn't be afraid to experiment, shouldn't be afraid to take somebody's idea, but we should have an end date on it. When I was explaining earlier in the week, I'd like to take 3 or 4 square miles of forest preserve here. I want to take 100 kids, not all out of the inner city, but a mix of people so they get to know each other. Take them for a 5 or 6 week thing someplace where they can stay. A little bit about high school, a little bit about how to plant stuff, a little bit about how plants work, some idea of some class, maybe some exercise, and we're going to not only clean out some of the underbrush for the decay, we're going to plant a boatload of trees, and we're going to see if we can get the oxygen generation of that area up a bunch from where it is, because some of my friends in NOAA claim that would work. Now, I want to do this for 2 summers, maybe 3, And if it doesn't work, I'll be the first guy to say, it was a nice try. Forget it. I'd love to do that because I think it could work. Gets people out of some areas where they're dodging bullets. Second thing is, you know, I love trains. I would take a place like Janesville, Wisconsin, which lost, I believe, Chevy plant or somebody. And I'm sure there's some rail that extends from here to Chicago up to Janesville. I would like to extend the commuter rail a little further than it normally is. I want to spend some money on making the overpasses so you're not running by a crossing. And I'd like to find a way to run a train 90 miles an hour at least the first 30 miles. Once it gets here, it can join like the normal system. To where can we extend the commute out to these areas that are having all these drug problems and everything into where they can work in what I think is a burgeoning Chicago economy regarding the Googles and those people that have all moved here. And you know what? We're talking about one rail line. It's not that much money in the universal sense. And after 3 or 4 years, if it doesn't work, I'll stand down. But I want to see stuff like that happening, Wayne, and I just don't.
Yeah, and I'm all for it. And as a matter of fact, in my administration, I'd ask you to be the Secretary of Transportation, and so you could run Elaine Chao out of the office. And then after that, you get to be Secretary of Interior, so you can institute that program to do forest clearing. No, I mean, you know, I'm being somewhat facetious here, but, you know, the trouble is we don't have anyone in this administration that really knows what the responsibilities and role is of the departments and agencies they head. You know, in past administrations, Democratic and Republican, yeah, we had the political appointees who were put in there, as part of the spoil system. But there were, you know, a lot of people in these jobs that absolutely knew what they were doing. You know, Trump says, "Well, we got to return to the moon." Well, you look at NASA today, and it's you know, and here we are, the 50th anniversary we're celebrating, and of the moon landing, and yet NASA is nothing like it used to be. It's pretty much been emaciated. There's a lot of contractors and private companies that are trying to take the place, but they're motivated by other things, not Kennedy's statement, you know, we're going to get to the moon this decade, and he said, and do the other things, and they're not really doing much of anything these days. We can't launch astronauts to the space station. We have to use the Russians for that,
which is unconscionable. How we would ever, when we're fighting with the Russians, have our people up in a place that we couldn't go get them if we had to? That to me makes zero sense. I don't, you know, which is me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a conundrum. I mean, you know, either, you know, so, you know, either the trouble is with sanctioning Russia, how does this affect our ability to maintain the space station and our people on it? Because we're, you know, we've gone after Russian banks and, you know, foreign exchange and other things, and all they got to do is start retaliating, and they have in some cases, and that puts our people up on the space station in extreme jeopardy.
Well, it's almost been like a Trump show this morning, where I was talking about all the places where I thought his instincts were pretty good, and I will say the one major criticism I have, other than the fact that he doesn't seem to like people a whole hell of a lot, especially people that are different in any sense.
Yeah.
But my biggest intellectual criticism, and again, I don't know the man, is I don't think he has an idea that everything you do affects everything else. It's very two-dimensional, yeah. And the world is not... Remember when in Star Trek, the search for Khan, when Spock says to Kirk, he says, he's brilliant, but he thinks, because he comes from Earth and wasn't trained in space, he thinks two-dimensionally, and space is three dimensions.
Some people say Trump is he's a blackjack player and not a poker player.
Right.
It's in a casino thing. But
I've seen on the local level here, Wayne, and it's all levels of government. To me, maybe this is my trading floor mentality. Hey,
it's a trade. Are we doing it or aren't we? You had like 2 seconds to make up your mind, if that. And maybe that was probably a lot half the time. And I know it's filtered into my psyche, but I had one of a minority guy, doesn't matter whether he was or he wasn't. When I say minority, he was involved in a lot of minority programs. Not the fact that he was minority. I mean, who cares about that? But he was, let's say he benefited by being a minority tremendously. Is that a fair statement? Politically correct? Not saying it wasn't deserved. I'm just saying he benefited. Well, anyway, he's on this board where they're looking at this new commuter rail line in Chicago. So he calls me up and he says, hey, I'll buy you a beer. You gotta help me with this. Of course, it's an area that I'm familiar with. And he's giving me the maps and stuff, and I'm going over them in the bar. And I said, yeah, this looks like it could work. But I said, by the way, you're really going out of your way to make this on other people's rail lines. I mean, every trip's going to be 15 miles further than it has to be. That's okay. We don't want to condemn any land. We don't want to do this or anything. But they're trying to get at areas here. There's south suburbs here that are not served by either the Rock Island or the IC. Essentially, east of there, there's another whole string of places, Calumet City, those kinds of places, that have no commuter rail to the downtown. And it's one of the reasons why those cities are not doing so hot. Plus, the city is also shoving people from the south side, bad neighborhoods, and west side to the south suburbs. But still, if you want to make any attempt at, quote, saving these places, one of the things would be a commuter rail link to downtown. You know, because every other city that's got it is doing pretty well. It's like, okay, when are we running the first train? Well, what do you mean? We have like 2 meetings a year. We're essentially carving up, well, you get this station, you get this station. Wait a minute. Why don't we, these trains, they all have stairwells. Let's run one. Let's start running one train 3 months from now. Advertise it. And even if it's slow because we haven't gotten all the switches done right and everything, let's see if anybody hops on. You know, if the train's full after the second day, we know we better chop on this. He goes, nobody wants to do it that way. I go, why? I mean, what other way is there to do it? I mean, let's try it. I mean, you can. There's stations here for some of the commuter rails. They just stop across the street, and everybody hops off. And when they get off, the train takes off in the crossing. You don't need a station. I mean, come on, let's go. And he's like, oh no, we don't have another meeting scheduled for like 6 months. That was like, Wayne, it had to be 4 years ago, and I haven't heard boo from it since.
Yeah. Well, the Washington Metro system was very similar when they installed that and were building that. Certain tony areas in Washington said, no station here. We don't want the riffraff, they said. You know, one was Georgetown and the other one was Falls Church, Virginia. And therefore, neither one got a station, and now they wish they had. Because the metro, I mean, the real estate values around the station there are sky high. It brings in a lot of business and people and whatnot. And but you know they it was all this, you know, well, the whole Washington metro system is political patronage anyway. And apparently, one of the city councilmen in D.C. just got raided by the FBI. Over some hanky-panky he had going on with the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority.
One of the systems, and I think it was Washington, way back in the day, this is when I worked at Pullman, the original cars, I think it might have been the BART, but I think it was Washington. The people who built the cars, and it wasn't Pullman, totally screwed up, Wayne. I mean, when you build a car, a commuter car, virtually all the equipment is under the car, correct? So
the actual cars for the Washington Metro, they're Italian. They were made in Italy.
Well, and I think what happened originally, and I don't know if they've been, I use the term retrofitted, is when you design a rail car, okay, once in a while you're going to get a derailment, whether it's in a yard or someplace. So the one thing you want to do is the undercar arrangement, the first drawing, the first major drawing of a car, is the undercar arrangement drawing. Shows you where the air conditioner goes, where that goes, where this compressor goes. Yeah. And so here's room for the air conditioner. Therefore, guess what? This is how big the air conditioner has to be. So when it goes out for bid, here's how big it's got. Well, the idea is when you roll off the track, which somewhere in the system, that's going to happen. Hopefully it's in a yard somewhere or whatever. The idea is
that the stuff hanging under the car will still be an inch or so above the rails, even though the wheels are now not on the rail, right? Say you roll off to the left, and both of the wheels are still on the ties, you know, so there's no major damage. But you would hope then that there's still clearance between your air conditioner and the rail. But whoever right. whoever built those bleeped it up to where it was like a half inch too short. So if you fell onto the rail, you like landed on the air conditioner. That was not good. Now, I'm assuming in one of the major retrofits that has been fixed. But let's just say a minor derailment for those cars was never a mild minor derailment in a just a little something.
Yeah, it's very similar to the escalators at the metro stations. So they have these things exposed to the weather. You know, it snows. You got the salt. All the other stuff is getting into the machinery. So the biggest maintenance budget they had for the Washington Metro was for escalator repair. The elevators are another matter. They're messed up too. But then somebody said, you know, we could probably bring our budget costs down for escalator repair if we put like a plexiglass covering over the escalator. So when it rains and, you know, snows, it doesn't, you know, necessarily all of it goes into the machinery. But it took them 30 years or more, 40 years or more to, you know, decide. They should have done that right away, but they didn't.
You wonder if you sit, I mean, I never worked for the government, but you wonder if you're sitting there, I think these people do have good ideas. Do they just never even try and let them out because they're, I mean, how do we change this? I mean, when you look, I don't know if you read the Bourne Identity, not the one that, well, the book, and one of the guys from France gave the speech when one of the guys died, and he said, it used to be that public service was a serious way of life, that you worked, you made decent money, you got a pension, you actually did stuff for people. I mean, public service was a career. Now
in this country too. The civil, so you, a long time ago, you had to take a civil service exam to join the U.S. Civil Service. It was considered quite a profession. No matter what you did, the mere fact you could, I'm a civil servant, federal civil servant, people say, wow.
you know, when I was a janitor back in the day, then we became custodians. So I don't know if that was a step up or what. In the Chicago public schools, you had to take a civil service test to be a janitor. Stuff like, you know, you had to know what a pliers was, you had to know what this was, you had to know how to patch a window. There were things that you're supposed to be able to do. You had to know, you know, are you supposed to rinse the floor after you soap it up? Well, yeah. But I mean, I don't know how tough the test was. I was a temp, so I never take it, but I mean, at least there was something that says you needed a certain skill set even for that. You know, this Chicago Public School got rid of all their janitors. They're all outsourced. Can you imagine imagine the money?
I was talking about NASA earlier, and, you know, back with the Apollo and all the other missions, these were also civil service working for NASA. They were civil service engineers, electricians, physicists, and of course they had contractor support, but it was, you know, the civil service was in charge of the operation. Werner von Braun himself was in the civil service. He was, you know, attached to, you know, the NASA first at Huntsville, Alabama, and then at the Johnson Space Center in Houston and Cape Canaveral. So, you know, it's now flip-flopped. You got the SpaceX and what's the other one? Blue Orion or something. All these, you know, new companies sprang out of, you know, some billionaire's fantasy about, you know, going to colonize Mars or something.
Well, Wayne, we were talking, the last couple of days, I was dying to have you on today. I'm going to look at a couple of things in my industry. The idea that you have three or four firms that are really providing most of the markets. I mean, a lot of the markets are provided by retail people because they're the ones that are buying and selling. And you have those people really have a different set of rules in the sense that they can trade within the penny and we can't. We as a firm or we as a retail person. To me, Wayne, this were just like horrendously bad ideas from the get-go. And in a lot of cases, they've proven to be that way. You know, and FINRA, for instance, is now, instead of being an arm of the New York Stock Exchange or the Chicago Board Options Exchange that did firm audits, there are people who are in the business that were pretty knowledgeable, and you never, I mean, I think we got help more than hurt by any of those people, when they were here, because they mentioned stuff that, oh man, I should have thought of that type of thing. Well, now FINRA has been spun off to be a for-profit organization to where whenever they find somebody, that's how they get a bonus. To me, I can't even imagine an idea that horrible. Have you ever, and this is just two areas that I know, in all your years in government, because I've been kind of ranting about, you know, end dates on somebody's program, have you ever seen a program really die or somebody say, that was a really bad idea, we're going back to more competitive market making, or we're not going to have a group that runs around and finds people that gets paid by the fine? It's like the city, you know, giving you judgment on a parking ticket. Well, it's revenue to them. What are you doing here protesting? You just pay. Don't you get the deal? I mean, have you ever seen anything like this actually get reversed? Ever?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, we had a saying when I was in the Navy that there wasn't quite anything more permanent than a temporary structure that was built.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you're going to work. Yeah, it was temporary, but, you know, we don't have any money for new stuff. So,
well, that's why on the 100th anniversary of the Board of Trade, we actually was on a Christmas Eve of all things, Wayne. One of the guys from the Chicago Fed, he was their PR dude, real nice guy. He comes over, and he plunks down here on Christmas Eve right across from me. You've been in here. And, man, it was an absolute encyclopedia on Federal Reserve history, the First Bank of the United States, Second Bank of the United States. I just love talking to him. And you know, the Second Bank of the United States was allowed to essentially go out of business. And I go, wait a minute, let me get this straight. It actually went out of business. He goes, yeah. I said, so there were people working there on Friday. They were doing something. And on Monday, the door was locked. Nobody walked in there. There just was none. And he goes, yeah. I can't even imagine that, Wayne. Can you?
No. especially I was talking earlier about this dysfunction in government. And, nobody's really thinking out of the box. I mean, there's a few people running for president that are trying to think out of the box, but they're not in the top two or three or four candidates. They're way down number, 18, and,
Well, some are just too young. I think the guy from South Bend is a thinker, but I think he's just too young. He's two elections away or three.
Yeah. I can see why he had to, like, people say, well, why does he run for governor in Indiana or senator from Indiana? He's never going to get elected statewide in Indiana.
No.
So I can see that point that, hey, I can't do it statewide. I got to go right to the White House. But yeah, I agree with you. I think maybe if he were appointed an ambassador, he's got this gift of languages, including the signing, which, I think he speaks, Norwegian. His father was from Malta. He speaks Maltese. He speaks Spanish, French, and, give that guy make him Secretary of State.
Well, both of his parents were professors at Notre Dame.
Right.
I don't know if he knew that or not. He probably did. Nothing I'd probably say that you don't know. Yes, both of his parents were professors at Notre Dame. He's a bright, guy.
Right. So I can see why I couldn't, Indiana, yeah. I'm surprised he's mayor. Of course, Indianapolis and South Bend are, not representative of some of the other parts of the state, but I think he would be a great asset as Secretary of State, certainly better than the idiot Pompeo, who's in there now, who was basically elected as a Tea Party candidate in Kansas, and really has no knowledge about the rest of the world.
I'm going to say, Wayne, that one of the most understated things I've ever heard you say is Indianapolis and South Bend are not all that indicative of the rest of that state.
I've been through the rest of the state.
So have I.
Maybe West Lafayette, but you go a little bit away from Purdue, and wow. I'm not there anymore. I'm not in Purdue anymore. You click your red heels together, high heel shoes together. You say I'm not in Purdue anymore.
Ever tell you my story? I only got a minute about my episode at the Iron Skillet in West Lafayette.
Okay.
It's like 5 years ago. I went down and I bought this Toyota T100. I like old trucks. I'm driving it back, and I'm staying south Indianapolis, but I usually get up at 4 o'clock. So I'm driving. I drive 3.5 hours, and I get to this place. Now I'm hungry. I pull in, and I go to sit down, and there's a buffet. We don't really get the buffet. Let's get breakfast. I see these guys, like, looking at me, like, who's the new guy, you know, type of thing. And I'm going, I don't know where this is going. So finish my breakfast. I walk out, and one of the guys is hot-footing after me to the car. I'm sitting down, and I go, this is a conversation. I know enough from the south side. This is a conversation I better do standing up, and I'm towering over the guy. He goes, I think you bumped my truck with your car.
Oh, God.
And I said, you know, I hate it when somebody does that to me, so I'm very careful to never do that to anybody else. So he looks at me, and he goes, so you didn't hit my car? No, I didn't. Well, then what are we going to do about this? I'm not going to do anything. I'm getting my car, and I'm going. What do you want to do about it? This is at 7:30 in the morning, Wayne.
Yeah.
That's Indiana. There's been a lot of the not of Indianapolis, not of... Anyway, thanks very much, buddy, for hanging on. We'll have you back soon. SP Futures up 8 now. We're creeping. SP Futures up 30. Maybe we are going to make back most of those stuff yesterday afternoon. We'll see. Stocks and Jacks Monday morning.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.